from Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR Live session. JPR Live sessions are recorded with Audix microphones. Audix, when sound matters. My guest today has just released his sixth full-length album called Wave, and he's here with a full band. Patrick Watson, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Welcome to Ashland, Oregon.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's very nice to meet you.
It's nice to be in the mountains. Woke up in the bus, we're like, oh, we're in the mountains this morning.
It's a good time of year. I mentioned the full band. You've got a ton of folks and a ton of gear here in the studio. Who is with you and what are they going to do to help out today?
Well, we got Evan on drums over there and some SPDS and all that stuff. Joe on guitar, Joe Grass on guitar. He's got a whole bunch of crazy stuff too. Well, I guess everybody has crazy stuff. And Mishka's on the bass. You got Pietro Maro on the synths. And we have Erica singing with us out in the back there. So
right on. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Some of these guys have been with you for some time now, yeah?
Yeah. I studied with Mishka when we were in college. And we were in the ensemble class like the first day. And our old drummer was in the same ensemble class. We actually met in our first class. And we had this thing where we kept on landing in the same spots kind of just naturally from the get-go. It was quite weird. Didn't really take much effort. We just knew where each other would be, and then we just kept on playing music together, you know?
Those are the best combinations. In ensemble class, you weren't playing piano, I'm guessing.
I was playing piano,
oh, yeah. You were, yeah.
I studied jazz piano and all that stuff, and classical and composition and all that.
I read through an interesting bio of you that had stories that that felt like tall tales about the early days of learning piano.
Yeah.
How much truth was behind those stories?
I think they're all true. I wouldn't be making tall tales up for you.
You had a haunted piano?
Yeah, it's really weird because I used to tell my mom, I was like, I swear to God, it wasn't me playing piano. And I'd play late night and I'd start playing better than I usually do. And I was like, oh. And I'm like, yeah, it's weird. And it'd be always like really Celtically bizarre jams. And then, as I moved away, I thought I'd record, my parents were moving away, sorry, but then, and I wanted to record that piano one last time as a kid. So I recorded and I just did those improvs like till 4 a.m, like I did since I was 8. And I just played piano from 12 to 4 a.m. every night. And then I was listening back like 3 years later for fun. I mean, it wasn't very good music or anything like that. I was a terrible songwriter at that age, but in the middle, I just go into this Irish jig and I'm like, what the hell is that? And literally the lyrics go like, hi, my name is Gordon. And I'm like, no, come on. What was this Gordon thing? So I call my mom and I'm like, do you know, like, why would I sing Gordon or any kind of thing like that? She goes, well, your great-grandfather and his brother Gordon, which Gordon died at a very young age, used to play his piano all the time. He died of polio. And I was like, come on. I don't know, whatever. Whatever things are real or not, I don't think it really matters at this point. Yeah. It is what it is, and I don't know what is, so let's go with that answer.
Wow. You have boundless energy in person. I mean, I have watched and listened to a lot of interviews that you've done for radio and television, and yet it doesn't necessarily come across in the music that you create, which is a lot more relaxed, mellow, ethereal at times.
Well, funny, like, because mellow is like an interesting word, and you know, people use like really melancholic a lot of times to the music, and I think for me, it's kind of neither. It's kind of like when if you slow the world down to slow-mo, everything like kind of sticks out brighter. And like you see all the details and it's kind of like a lot to take in. And I kind of like going like a David Lynch slow-mo shot. And so I don't know if it's about being mellow or melancholic. I just find like when it's quiet and slow, you just start hearing details that you don't when it's really loud and fast. Not that loud and fast is bad or nothing like that. Yeah. I got a pretty active mind, so maybe when I play music I want it to slow down a bit. You know what I mean? And I the other thing is like a lot of these instruments, I mean depending on the instruments, but like sometimes when you record, when you play softly, it just sounds so rich and all the overtones stick out. I'm still a noise person. I like noise, you know, so you know, when as soon as you play loud it gets real bright and harsh, and I don't know, it's hard to know, but it's not the goal to be mellow. And I don't feel mellow when I'm writing. In fact, I feel really hyper when I'm writing these quiet songs. And there's like, you know what I mean? So maybe there's something lost in the translation. But I think when you see us live, you have a better idea of how that mellow kind of works. And you quickly realize it's not a mellow. It's just kind of like the world's in slow-mo. And then everything becomes like a weird movie. So I think it's more like that.
Yeah. Can we hear some of it?
Yeah.
What are you guys going to play first?
We're going to play Kick It Off with Melody Noir. It's a song inspired by a singer called Simon Diaz, a tune actually called Tonada de la Luna. And I just thought he was the greatest singer I ever heard. So I kind of wrote a song to answer him. And to be honest, I mean, it's a song I wanted to write those lyrics for a long time. It's about those nasty holes you got in you that you always try to fill that never work. So since you can't get rid of them, I thought I'd write a love song for us. So
this is Patrick Watson. Music from Wave on JPR.
Tell me where the wind is blowing, 'cause that's where the music's going. You are my big dark blue, and I wanna swim all around you. You are the sweetest melody I ever sung. I feel like I know you, but you're just a ghost to me. And when I sit beside your shadow, so my comforts me. You are the sweetest melody I've ever sung. My remedy to rescue me. You are a breeze and a song that carries me. You are the sweetest melody I've never sung. Your touch that fits in your arms as much. And when I try to fill it up, this hole gets bigger every time. You are the sweetest melody I've never sung. You are the sweetest melody I've never sung.
You are my island, my remedy to rescue me. You are a breeze and a song that carries me.
You are the sweetest melody I
is called Melody Noir. It's music from the album Wave. Patrick Watson and the band are live in the studio today playing music from the record. I found it completely fascinating that for some time this band opened for James Brown.
I know, it's weird, right?
How did that go? Did you get love from crowds, or were they just waiting for you to finish?
Well, here's the thing, right? So it was really good that we had to do that really early on, because we didn't really have an idea of what things should be. And obviously, we knew we didn't belong there. We're not blind or nothing like that, or stupid. But what I quickly realized on that, it was like the first one I did alone, solo piano. And I had no stage chops in terms of being a performer. I did small shows, but I didn't know what the hell I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I just remember walking in Paris, it was like 7,000 people. I mean, I'd never played for more than 500 people. And I remember the walk to the piano was like, felt like it took like 25 minutes to get there because the stage was so big. And then I was like, well, listen, there's no way I'm not going to play dance music, and that is not going to work. And I just kind of started learning, like, just put your stuff on your sleeves. Like, just be like super sincere and just like stick it out to the wind. And even if they don't like it, they're just going to know that at least. So it became a really early game plan. But interesting enough, that band were very, very kind and very, very like, I mean, James Brown and that whole gang had so much class, and they were so awesome with us. They took us in. They, like, even if we played totally different music, they were so nice to us. And I ended up watching James Brown every night for those 10 nights, and I just took notes of what a front man should do. And I think what we had in common was we both felt like when we go to sing, we're going to church. And that's not really like a particular religious connotation. It's just the idea of a front man being part of a ceremony. And what I quickly realized about James Brown was, I think you expect when he goes on stage, he tells people what to do in the audience. Really, it's kind of it's a conversation. So he'll get up there. Obviously, he'll give him lots of energy, and then he'll listen. And he'll keep on listening, and he'll listen so patiently that the audience just wants to give him feedback. So what he's doing is he lets the audience start conducting the show. So the whole band watching his fingers. So before he goes to the bridge or the chorus, he just waits for the audience to tell him they want it. So it's not him telling them what to do necessarily. Yeah. And it's not the James Brown show as much as he says it's the James Brown show. It's a ceremony. And like before they would get on, they would do a big prayer. Once again, it's not about which particular religion or whatever, but it's just about the idea of that's a special place to go on. They show up to the venue in a suit. They leave the venue in a suit. There's like just the level of class is just so high and so inspiring. So I just sat there and watched him, and I took notes. And then even if we do different type of music, I felt like that was my teacher for 10 days. I had like a personal class with James Brown teaching me how to run a stage.
Wow. I mean, it sounds almost like he understood something that you have talked about in the past, which is that idea that people have stopped making music in their homes on their own. It's all become this massive thing that we all absorb as consumers. But he was trying to bring that participatory part of it back to the crowd.
Well, you know, people used to say soul music, I think when you're not from those areas, you like, oh, everybody thinks funk music is like, oh, it's get drunk and party and dance. And maybe you don't necessarily totally understand what the soul word means until you're really inside that context. And it's not a joke when it's soul music, it's like you're going to church, whatever church of your choice, but you're still going to church in some way. And it's more than like, we're just going to have fun. It's something inside that happens. And I feel that at least if we're going to have anything in common between the two, we had that in common, and he recognized that, and I recognized that we just really wanted to make a special moment with people, and I don't need to be like some fancy singer or nothing like that. And a lot of people now get so cry about the death of an album. They think it's like the end of the world, you know, and I'm like, that an album's like 50 years old, like it's really not the end of the world, like music's like thousands of years old. Really the only thing we lost in the 20th century is, like you said, everybody used to have a piano, and each person used to sing a song. And I don't think you need all these fancy people singing songs for you. I think you should just sing for yourself and enjoy it as much as you listen, you know? So that's kind of what the essence of music is lost, you know, for me.
Well, I know this is now going back more than 10 years.
Yeah.
To a record that you released called Close to Paradise.
Yeah.
An awful lot of people enjoyed listening to that and listening to you sing those songs.
Mm-hmm.
Won the Polaris Prize.
Yeah.
Congratulations. I know it's many years past at this point, but it's an amazing honor. And I know for folks in the States, sometimes Polaris Prize just sounds like some foreign thing they don't quite understand. Talk about the magnitude of that for a Canadian artist.
Well, it's a pretty interesting prize. Originally, it was invented to kind of you know, like whenever we do the Grammys or we do this, or even like the Junos in Canada, which is like same thing, it's equivalent. They are kind of a giant, like, corporate, it's an ad, and most of those everything's paid for. It's not really music awards. Like, these are just labels who, like, decide amongst themselves who they're going to let put out into the front and sell their records. I mean, that's what it is. So they made the Polaris, so much like the Mercury Prize in England, where it's supposed to be just, like, from an artistic point of view and without any of that kind of part of the conversation, which is okay. It's part of the deal of music anyways, but so winning it, obviously, you feel good because you feel like it's not if you get it, you feel like you earned it from just like a music point of view and nothing else. And so I guess it's a big deal in that way, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a big deal.
Yeah. It's, you know, winning an award in music, it's not like running. It's not how fast you run. It's a perspective, you know what I mean? And I think I think like people always say it, when you get nominated, you're all happy in the arts. It's mainly because of that. It's like, it's not like you can run faster than the other person. It's no real. It's kind of like figure skating being an Olympic sport. It's like brutal. And you just see people sitting looking at the marks and they're crying and screaming. And my sister was a figure skater when I was a kid. And it's just like, why did they make artistic thing part of like a judging Olympic sport is insane. It's just.
I'm with you.
Basically, if you grew up like in a figure skating ring, which is a bit ridiculous to talk about, but they get off, they smile, and then everybody just cries for like 6 hours in the backstage. It's just like off ice, cry, 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 skate, 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 cry, 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 cry. It's a disaster.
Patrick Watson is my guest in the studio today. He's here with his full band, and they are playing music from the new record called Wave. Information can be found online at patrickwatson.net. Will you guys play us another song?
Yeah. What do you? I think we're going to do Turn Off the Lights next.
I'm not so sure everybody's seen around. Cause I'ma turn off the lights. Cause I'm not so sure everybody's seen right. Even in the way you try, we can see that your makeup was running late last night. Has it been a while since you lay beside each other and let the walls fall down? It's just a smile and cry. Everybody's got.
Skinny That one is called Turn Out the Lights. Patrick Watson is my guest in the studio today. The new record is called Wave. Information is online at patrickwatson.net. That record out on Domino, by the way. I want to talk in depth about this record. You were on Q recently with Tom Power.
Yeah.
Talking about how this record is kind of a collection of songs about bouncing back from turbulence in life.
Yeah,
is that a fair assessment of it?
Yeah, I called it the wave because, I mean, there's sometimes in life for everybody, someone's going to come and knock all your stuff away. You know what I mean? It's going to wash everything out and you got to start from scratch. And I think writing this record, if I was going to use that metaphor, when you get stuck like in a really big wave, there's this point where you're stuck in it. And if you try to swim, you're going to drown. There's a moment you just have to let the wave do what it's going to do. And then when it's done with you, then you swim and you got to save your energy. So it's not about giving up necessarily, but there's this kind of strange calm in that moment where it's tossing you around and there's nothing you can do. And if you actually can just let go in that moment, it's quite an exhilarating feeling. Mm. And I feel like the record's written inside that moment. You're like, well, there's not much I can do now and just let life drop where it's going to drop and do the best I can later, you know? And it was really nice. It was kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a nice feeling, to be honest.
I know you had personal stuff. There was some band changes going on over the last couple of years. Does doing this, radio interviews, television interviews, where you're asked about it, you talk about it, help you process and move through that stuff? Or does it make it more difficult for you to have enough time to really process it on your own?
I've already processed all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty, for me, like... Yeah, and I all got processed in a really nice way. I mean, I fell really nicely on my feet. I had to start my family over from scratch and, you know, the band. I did a lot of things I had to start from scratch. And getting to start from scratch where I was is kind of a nice thing because you kind of get to build a stronger foundation. So I'm actually pretty happy about it, to be honest, at this point. So.
Yeah. The band has been called Patrick Watson for many years now,
yeah,
right? You are Patrick Watson. The band is Patrick Watson.
Well, it's an accident, right? So... I was asked to like make an album for a photo book, and I didn't want to be in a band. I wanted to do like film score and multimedia projects and be more of a composer. So then I did that CD, and then I had to do it live. So all the guys in college were like, let's do it live together, you know, and we did. And then we had a lot of fun. So we just kept on playing, and then it turned into a band. But by then, people knew my name, so it was really hard to switch in time. Mm. And then once people know a name in music, it's not that easy, right? So, and we couldn't find a cool band name, so we said, you know, we'll just keep it like that. But, I mean... It's not that fair for the band members, obviously, because they have a large input. Like, you know, Melody Noir was written by Mishka, but I think we just do the best we can with it.
Hmm. Before I let you guys go today, and I hope you'll indulge me, I mentioned that you were on Q recently.
Yeah.
And just a couple of months back, you were featured in a tribute to Lhasa.
Yeah.
Who I know that you were quite close to.
Yeah, old friend of mine.
We have played her music for years.
Oh, really?
Here on JPR and have been huge fans of really an instrumental and monumental artist in Canada.
Yeah.
What would you say about her to folks who don't yet know her music?
Well, if I'm going to take you back a little bit in time, Montreal was very much a world music scene, a very strong one, because we have really close ties to Europe and in the French language, obviously. So Lhasa would be like, if you leave Canada and the States, she's like a legend. And like, if you go France, it's like stadiums everywhere else. It's like they're huge venues. She's kind of this... Okay, I think this sums it up. Like, there's a video of her at 12 years old singing Billie Holiday and doing it.
Hmm.
12 years old.
Yeah.
Not like singing it, like doing like it.
Feeling it.
And at 12 years old. And, like, Billie Holiday is, like, the hardest thing to sing there is. I mean, she's one. It's just so hard to own that kind of depth. I feel like Lhasa was, like... She come from a circus family. They grew up in a bus. They traveled around the country. Like, her dad's really poetic. Her mom's this lady who's been through everything that you can imagine in life. She's an accumulation of all this stuff. And then when she opens her mouth, like, this, the old gypsy soul comes out. And when I say gypsy soul, like the real gypsy soul, not the one you get at a candy shop. And it's like, as soon as she opens up, it's like this old ghost is singing to you. And she's a really, really powerful singer. And when she takes a stage, you just like, she'd be like giggling backstage. And then she's singing, you'd be like, ooh. You invited that cat to the stage, you know? But she's a very sweet, soft, incredible singer. It's funny, when she passed away, like I guess a couple of years ago, I still haven't tasted that magic since she's died. Mm. It's almost, you know, there's that gypsy thing that used to exist, that thing in the air. I find it really rare now to feel it, but I guess she would be, for me, the essence a bit of that kind of spirit in music.
Another monumental artist that you had an opportunity to work with.
Yeah.
Leonard Cohen.
Yep.
You produced a song
Yeah, on the last record.
Yeah. What did you learn from him?
It's really funny. I learned actually loads in the last 3 years from him.
And how much time did you really spend together?
Well, here's the story. So my mom used to love Leonard Cohen a lot, and I'm a muso. I come from like orchestral music, so obviously the music is not in the first spotlight of Leonard. It's literally lyrics and delivery.
Sure.
And as I was younger, I never understood it. And at the time, my ex-partner was editing films, and she kept on running these interviews. And his interviews are like, for me, a mind blow. They're like, I find them even better than his lyrics because they're a little bit funnier, still with the same depth in a little simpler. And he was talking about music and the fact that like how powerful music as a voice is, because it can just like wash over the lyrics. So his arrangements were really just letting the lyrics be the first place. So skip to a little later, I'm with Adam Cohen doing his son's record, and he's like, "Oh man, we got this track with my dad, and we can't get it. Do you want to do it?" And I'm like, "Well, absolutely, because now I get to do it the way I hear it." So he said, "We're not gonna tell your dad. I'm gonna give you the tracks. We're gonna do it, and we're gonna give it to him when it's done. We're just gonna do a real test." And then in my head, I was like, "Obviously, I don't know better than Leonard Cohen or anybody else, but I thought I would just try something. I would just hear straight up, no nonsense." So I tried to tell the story of the lyrics, try to stay under them like he talked about. But what I learned was when I got his track, I had his vocals and I had his music he had written, which was that crazy 80s version, crazy shit. And then I muted it and I just had his vocal alone. And just his vocal alone did so much damage. And every word seemed it was sung to be counted for. And it made my delivery completely change. Like when I sing a word, every word, I just focus on the damn word, not the notes I'm singing anymore. And I find that makes your delivery a lot more powerful. I find you as a performer, you can become more powerful, and you're not just noise, and you're not just singing all those notes. You just tell them the story. Yeah. And you know, and all my best music teachers since I was a kid would always tell me that, and as you get older you just learn that over and over and over again, you know. But
yeah, it took Leonard Cohen for it to sink in.
Leonard Cohen taught me how to deliver again. Yeah.
Well, I am thrilled to hear your stories. I'm so glad you're here with
your band. Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you for having us here.
Patrick Watson is my guest. His newest record is called Wave. Information can be found online at patrickwatson.net. You guys have one more song for us to play.
Yeah. We're going to do a tune called Broken. Mm. I don't usually write these kind of songs, but I saw this Radiohead concert. I was like, well, if he's allowed to get all crazy about it, I'm going to get all crazy about it. So, and I just kind of wrote this tune called Broken.
This is Patrick Watson, live on JPR.
Tell me where we're going now. I hope it's better than one. We tried everything to save our love. The best was always waiting to come. What did we dig too deep? For 51 reasons not to lose our sleep. It's not that you're not the one. And it's not that you're not the one. 'Cause we all need a little peace. Do you feel a little proud? Still love you like the very first time. with all the laughs you've been before and leave behind what you don't want no more. Sometimes you wanna go by, but it don't work like that. Do you feel a little broken?
That one is called Broken. It's Patrick Watson playing live here at Jefferson Public Radio. The new record is called Wave. Information online at patrickwatson.net. Patrick, thanks again for coming
by. Thank you so much for having us.
JPR Live sessions are supported by and recorded with Audix microphones. Located in Wilsonville, Oregon, Audix designs, engineers, and manufactures high-performing, innovative products that contribute to the advancement of the professional audio industry. We'll have audio from our session today and a few photos up on the web at ijpr.org. Open Air continues right after this.